Hey, it's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name is Bill DeYoung. I'm so proud to be sitting here with two of the finest actors in Tampa Bay from Job Site Theater. I have Mr. Giles Davis.
Hello, Bill. Great to see you.
And the fabulous Katrina Stevenson is back with us.
Hello.
And you guys are here to talk about the tragedy of Macbeth, which opens this week. This will come in on Friday, so we're just going to say...
Yep, so it's opening night.
So, yeah, there you go. Friday is technically opening night. Yep. You have a couple of previews earlier this week. But you guys, I'm looking at Lord Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. First of all, tell me the thing with theater. I thought you weren't supposed to say the name of the play. What's the superstition there? Are we not supposed to talk about it?
In the theater itself,
yeah.
You should not say the name of the play unless you're doing the play. The play itself has, superstitiously a curse around it.
Uh-huh.
So you don't want to call the play unless, of course, you're doing it.
But I'm allowed to do it here because
yeah,
you're
not in it.
Okay, I'm not going to get struck by lightning.
No, you're fine.
This is, from my limited knowledge of such things, you guys are the experts, it is one of the bloodiest, most tragic of Shakespeare's tragedies. Am I correct?
Blood is one of the major central themes. I can't tell you how many times the word appears in the text, but it is a good number.
Mm-hmm.
It's symbolic of the stain of taking a life, and how that marks a life once the deed is done.
I did see a photograph.
And there is no way to remove the blood once it's been spilt.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. I can reference something that she says later, but I won't do that. But I did see the photograph of the two of you with bloody hands. I guess it's the daggers.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah.
I did read up a little bit on it, but. Macbeth runs through February 9th at Job Site. It's in the Jabe Theater, which is the larger of the two facilities that Job Site uses. Both of you have been with this company quite a while. I think you might have a few years on this, gentleman.
She does.
Yes, I do. January of 2000 was my first performance with Job Site.
Was that in somebody's garage?
Yes, it actually
was. Cardboard boxes and stuff?
The Silver Meteor Gallery in Ybor.
There you go.
A step up from a cardboard box, but not by much.
You knew David at school, right?
At grad school, we met at UF. He was a couple of years ahead of me and was like, hey, I started this theater company. And I came down to see some of the shows, and it was really cool. And when I finished my MFA, I didn't know where to go. So I was like, well, I'll go down there for a while. And I got hooked.
25 years later, Kat, you're still here.
I know.
And I wanted to ask you both. I mean, it's so cool that you're both here because you're both still here after a number of years because you work together a lot, okay? But you're kind of I would say, you're the great unwashed, two of the stalwarts of the company. Do you feel like at this point it's cool to be like part of an exclusive club or you're part of a gang? I mean,
we're a gang. once you leave, get in, you can't get out.
You can check in, but you can never check out.
No, we were actually talking about this in the car on the way over. Job Site really is family.
Yeah.
And those of us who've, been around for a while, we are as close as, and we have just as much, tension as with a normal family. But, we have everybody's backs. And so it's really nice when you get in a room and half of those people are, fresh off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other half are people that you know how to work with them. And it's so easy to jump into a new project.
But it is important, as you say, to bring in new people.
Of course.
Fresh blood,
I would say people like Blake Smallin, who is kind of, kind of become a part of the company now. What does that do for you, Giles, as an actor, to have these? I mean, I saw you both were in Gory Stories, with some younger people. And does that invigorate you as an actor to have?
It does.
Fresh blood.
It's really invigorating to bring in, fresh actors with new eyes and new abilities, new ways of approaching the work. At some point in your career, what you want to be doing is passing on the experience and the knowledge that you have gleaned.
Yeah.
So it's nice to feel a little like a mentor,
But you're still working. I mean, you're still working it. It's not like we're the veteran actors.
We're just gonna lay back on.
We'll phone it in, right?
Oh yeah, there is no way to phone it in. Yeah.
No, the work is, and the people who keep coming back to job site, the work is the thing. We love being in that room and tearing it apart and putting it back together. That's where the fun is.
Yeah.
Performances are great, but the work in the room to make that happen, that's the ticket. And I have to say one thing about younger actors in Shakespeare. Not many schools around here are going to teach actors, you know, how to really deep dive into a text.
Yeah.
And so as we bring in, you know, younger or less experienced actors, one of the treats that we've had for, you know, quite a while now is Giles has not only shown by example, but he's our textbook. He pulls Shakespeare apart, helps everybody to understand, helps them to just, you know, live in that. And schools can't do that anymore. Most of them don't. Giles is able to do that. And David, you know, also the two of them understand these texts so well.
Is it like another language? I mean, is it literally like another language you speak? I speak English, French, you know, Spanish, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Shakespeare.
Arguably, perhaps, as, you know, the modern world has progressed, our dictionary has gotten very small, so that I would say, although they are English words, they are very unfamiliar English words. So you are just simply learning new words. So arguably, you could say it is another language. Yes. And then the ability to tackle that kind of poetic, complex text, it takes a level of analysis almost like algebra, where you have to break it apart, see its component parts, understand the component parts, and then to be able to put it back together in a way that is intelligible. There are lessons that we learn as babies about how we communicate and inflection, that until your soul is attached to what you're saying, you're not going to obey those rules because you don't consciously understand those rules.
That must be daunting for a young actor. Like, oh my God.
Without a doubt.
What is he telling me? I don't want to do this.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, do most people get it? I mean, is it a sort of thing where there's a light bulb moment where you can see one of the young people kind of going, oh, that's what we're talking about.
Beautiful light bulb moments.
Yeah. Yes.
When you can suddenly start hearing it in the delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
So one of the things that David talked about online and always talks about with the Shakespeare stuff, which comes around once a season, is setting it. Mm-hmm. You know, and he said, well, do we want to make it contemporary? Do we want to put it in New Orleans? No. He says, well, we don't want to do Shakespeare in space. That mm-hmm. was his line, which David is very witty, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what was going on, how you decided to set, where is it set, and how did you decide on what you were going to do with this?
Shakespeare is set in space. No.
Where no man has gone before, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Our sound designer, Jeremy Douglas, absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant man.
Oh, yeah.
Happy to have him on board now, yeah.
He's been in here a few times.
Yeah. Really got in his head that he wanted to create a living score to Macbeth in space. You know, highly kind of influenced via Dune and those kind of, you know, almost like space fantasy as opposed to science fiction.
But it doesn't take place on a spaceship or anything like that.
No, there's too much of the natural world involved.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere, it doesn't matter where.
Mm-hmm.
David coined the phrase picto-futurism. So it's like if, you know, the original kind of Scottish clans evolved into the future, what would it be? Mm. And so that's kind of our stylistic kind of inspiration.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with the Star Wars universe, it has elements of the Outer Rim. It's, mm-hmm. you know.
But thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Sci-fi, but almost Western sci-fi.
Yeah.
A dirtier, grittier, you know, non-Star Trek universe.
Well, nobody's got phasers and it's like, exactly. Hey, check this, Banquo. You know, none of that, right?
You know, and really when it comes down to designing our Shakespeares, we like to have a visual story mm-hmm. that goes along with the words, where you can identify who these people are, what their relationships are, what their status is in a visual moment. And also, you know, the nice thing about working in the Jabe is creating a visual spectacle as well. Mm. because that's important not only for Shakespeare but for theater in general these days.
For the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to free the audience from not having to worry about, is this really Scotland or is this, where is this, when is this?
Yeah. Right.
We're removing it out of a familiar time and place, so that's irrelevant.
Yep.
What is most important is the human journey that's occurring.
The, story of greed and a lust for power.
Yes.
Is kind of universal, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can we look at this photograph, which, of course, you folks at home can see right there in the text. Can you guys go through maybe left or right and tell me who everybody is and the character they're playing? Can you see it okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, starting on the left is Logan Frankie. She's playing Ross, one of the witches, one of the murderers.
Oh, the Witch Master, great, by the way.
Yeah, the witches are awesome.
Logan's been in here before. She did, I think it was Logan. For maybe Frankenstein.
She was the makeup artist for Frankenstein.
She's great, yeah.
Then we move into, go ahead.
That's Blake Smolin. He's playing Banquo and young Seward, which is an English general who gets brought into Scotland to assist in the fight.
Okay.
Mona Lim. Mona Lim, this is her first time working with Jobsite. We love Mona. Mona's playing Duncan, one of the witches, one of the murderers, and the doctor.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you have women playing men, et cetera, et cetera. And that goes back to Shakespeare's time.
Yeah.
I guess you didn't have women on stage in those days, but and everything was played by men. But you can do that with these.
Well, and there's some of these characters where the gender is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Their function, their place in the play is important. So, you know, if you want to say that they're women, you want to say that they're men, hey, go for it.
Okay. That could be, you know, Wookiees or Klingons for that matter.
No.
Yeah.
Then we have Jared Selleck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing Malcolm, the son of Duncan, and one of the witches, and one of the children of Macduff.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and then those two yahoos in the middle, that's Katrina Stevenson playing Lady Macbeth and Giles Davis playing Macbeth. So, you know.
Yeah, we're gonna cut that part out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Troy
Patrick.
And he's playing Satan, which is the...
Oh, I know Troy, sure.
Yeah. And he's the head of the Mac household as far as, you know, running the castle and all.
Mm-hmm.
Who else does Troy play?
That's it.
I think that's it. Yeah. He's one of the few who get a full arc.
Catherine Yacko, who I think has the best actor track in the show, she's playing Lennox, Lady Macduff, and the Porter.
Can we just congratulate Catherine because she just got married? Hello, Catherine, and congratulations. I hope I see you soon. Thanks.
And Cornelio Aguilera, Cokie, for short.
Yeah.
He's playing Macduff, and I'm happy to say that since Jobsite started doing the annual Shakespeare, I think he's pretty much been in all of them.
Just about,
if not all of them.
I think the first one I saw when I started doing this was, and we've talked about this, was Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
And Cokie was in that too.
He was.
Mm-hmm. And that was, so I a lot of these faces were kind of cemented for me back in that era.
Mm.
You know, 20, so I don't know when that was.
2018, 19
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Catalyst is actually 7 years old this month.
Hey.
So, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, hey, man.
Yeah.
You know, so, we're rocking it. Do you guys look forward to Shakespeare every year? Is it sort of like,
I do.
It's coming up mid-season, do you?
Yeah, no, it's my, it was my first love in the theater, and all through, especially undergraduate and graduate school, if there was a Shakespeare or any classical play, that's what I was cast in. And I just love the larger-than-life stories. And, of course, I love the language.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would do a season of Shakespeare, but nobody wants that.
Well, what's so interesting for me as a fan, if you will, is to watch both of you and the others in the company that we see a lot doing different things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sort of like, the Shakespeare's really cool, but they do all this other stuff, too, that's really good, you know. But is it a high point for you, Giles? Is it sort of like, I can get out my Shakespeare dictionary and start teaching people now?
Yeah, I love it for a different reason. You know, I really enjoy the eclectic nature of the art form, you know, where I would hate to only do period pieces or Shakespeare, but it does have a special place in my heart. And I'm lucky enough to say that I've done enough of it that, you know, arguably you could say I'm, you know, an expert simply from experience. From an early age, I had a huge amount of respect for it just because my parents did. Oh, yeah. I might not have understood it, but I was like, okay, so this is, you know, a high form of the art. And because we're doing it once a year, and my relationship that has developed with David, it's, you know, really a great pleasure to be working off of him in a different capacity where I'm working on the text, I'm approaching the text, and I'm being able to assist my fellow actors in a way that I couldn't normally do in another production, in a modern production, you know?
I can see you backstage going, well, no, Dr. Frankenfurter would say it this way.
Yeah, whereas, you know, typically I might be backstage with my actor brain saying, oh, I'm not sure I would have made that choice.
Right.
This way, I've got an excuse where I can say, I'm not sure you should have made that choice.
Yep.
You know, maybe think about making a different one.
Jobside, as we've said, there's a Shakespeare production every year, but this is not the first time Macbeth has been done.
No.
2013 was the last one.
I was, yes. When we were talking just a few moments ago, I was thinking to myself, I think Mac may have been my first job site Shakespeare show.
Yep.
Ah.
It was.
Yeah.
And were you the big man then?
I was the Dane, yeah.
Yeah, the Dane. Okay, see, I'm learning. Uh-huh. Were you in that one as well?
Yes, I was.
Not the Dane, forgive me.
No, that's...
That's the other one.
That's the one I got to do 2 years ago.
I know, we talked about that. Yeah, the guy made a mistake, folks. I thought he never made mistakes.
Yeah, when we did it before, I was, a witch and Ross and Peckett and,
Lady Macbeth, my God.
Yeah.
One of the great
bucket
insane
list.
Characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it a bucket list thing?
Yeah, but a very different kind of insane than, like, because, again, I did Ophelia 2 years ago. That
right.
was a very different kind of insane.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you? Well, of course you did. You saw Roxanne's show Thrice to Mine.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In as much as I can understand it. You know, being, again, part of the great unwashed. It's like, oh, and Rox was very kind to sort of tell me what it was, where it came from, and all of that.
No, and that was wonderful to have that right before going into this, because, you know, the play doesn't address, you know, Lady Macbeth's backstory, and you may not see it or note it, but I, as the actor, I'm like, ooh, I can pull that in, I can pull
sure.
that in. You know, if, you know, ambition just to be, you know, ambitious is kind of disgusting, but if you look at this should have been mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taken from me.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming into my own, and you are, you know, we are coming into what should have been. That's easier, mm-hmm. You know, because that's not a villainous reason to do anything.
Right. It's far more human to have a justification for that ambition.
That's exactly
what I
got out of it. When
the opportunity arises, it's okay. This was what was meant to happen, so let's take it.
And poor Macbeth gets caught up in the middle of all
that. He does, unfortunately.
You know? Yeah. Well, we're talking about the tragedy of Macbeth, which opens tonight at Jobsite Theater. That's in the David A. Straz Center for the Performing Arts in Temba. It's in the Jabe Theater. And you can find all kinds of stuff, including showtimes, a great description of the play and the cast list, and all sorts of witticisms from David Jenkins, who's the director and also the artistic director of the company, at jobsitetheater.org. See, I said all that without taking a breath.
Nice.
Well done.
Probably not a good idea. Giles Davis and Katrina Stevenson, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure, Bill.
And I wish you broken legs from here to eternity, as they
Cheers.
Say.
Thank you so much.